Hey y'all, so this week's episode is a few days late, so thank you so much for bearing with us. We had to record this episode separately, so the audio quality is not as good as usual. There's a little bit of static, so we do apologize for that, but we hope you enjoy the episode. Anyway, thanks for listening. Here's episode 5. Hi, welcome to episode 5 of the Woke-ish podcast. This is Ebony.
And this is Zelma.
And this week we will be talking about all the stuff that's happening with black men in Hollywood over the last few weeks. We are gonna hone in specifically on R. Kelly and Jussie Smollett, but there's just been all types of drama and such. But before we get there, we will start with our shout-out segment.
So our first shout-out goes to Queen Latifah, who who's investing in affordable housing in her hometown of Newark, New Jersey. And I read an article about it because I wanted to know exactly what she was doing, because sometimes I hear things about people investing in like their hometown, and it turns out not to really be investing. So apparently she's co-president of Blue Sugar Corporation, which is partnering with Gon Sosa Development for this $14 million project. Wow. The housing includes 23 family townhomes and a three-story mixed-use building, which I'm assuming is like both public housing and non-public housing, or maybe just different types of...
I think it's both public and non-public.
Okay, so with 16 additional units.
Oh my goodness. So if you heard that, that is thunder. That's what we're going through right now. my God. We're spring when you need it.
Those 16 units. So 16 units will be affordable housing, with 20 units including three family townhomes. And the so affordable housing means that some of the rent will be paid by like housing vouchers, and then the family will pay for the remainder, and then the others will be market rates starting at $1,800 a month. The mixed use building will include a fitness center and commercial space for rent to nonprofits, which I thought was cool. So I think that's good. Like, she's not only just doing public housing projects, she's doing or homes, but she's doing she's gonna make money off of this. And I like that she's not just, it's just gonna be like public housing isolated in one part of town, and then the nicer homes being in another. It's like, because they're all in the same building, they're gonna get the same type of attention, and it makes, forces people to live together.
It definitely, I feel like, gives people access to more resources, because like you're saying, you know, like a public housing facility or complex would not have something like a fitness center. But one thing that I did hear about last year that New York public housing was an issue that they were having was that, and hopefully something that Queen Latifah is involved in, or, you know, that people of color are involved in, would not have this issue. But apparently they were like dividing the buildings so that public housing was on one side and non-public housing on another, and they had separate entrances so that they wouldn't have to like see one another. And then the public housing's apartments were smaller, and the like fixtures and stuff that they put in there were cheaper. So I'm hoping that, I feel like we need more people like this involved on these projects, because otherwise, like, the, you know, the builders and stuff, they just do all types of shady things. So I'm hoping that by her being involved, they'll make sure that it's kind of, it's equitable, and that, you know, they aren't, because owners get a kickback from the government for this, right? Yeah. So it's subsidized by the government, and then the owners get to pocket some of the money. So to deprive people who are on public housing but be benefiting from the housing voucher is foul. Like, that's not right at all. So hopefully this is a sign that there will be improvements. Maybe New Jersey handles things differently than New York does. But yeah, no, it's definitely a good thing. So shout out to her.
So hopefully this ends up being like a positive. But you know, shout out to her for focusing on her hometown and trying to improve.
I didn't even know she was from Newark.
Me neither. Yeah. So our next shout outs are about the Oscars since they happened last weekend. Mm-hmm. So shout out to Regina King, who won the Oscar for Best Supporting Actress, to Mahershala Ali, who won the Oscar for Best Supporting Actor, to Spike Lee, who won an Oscar for Best Adapted Screenplay for Black Klansman, and to Ruth E. Carter and Hannah Bleacher for becoming the first Black women to win in their respective categories, that being costume design and production design. So it was I actually watched the Oscars because I wanted to see. It's like I shop for movies and I see.
Really?
And because Green Book was on there and Black Panther. If Beale Street Could Talk, I just wanted to see. And Roma, I wanted to see.
Yeah, they had some pretty good stuff this
year. Yeah, yeah. And so.
They better after last year.
I know. I was really happy with, and Regina King and her speech. I just love their speeches too, especially when it's their first win. Mm-hmm. And her speech was great. And, you know, Spike Lee was genuinely really happy. And of course, he used his speech to talk about like the politics, saying that it's time to do right in 2020. So shout out to them. I was really happy. And, also shout out for still having firsts of something in 2019 Oscars. But congratulations to everyone and all the nominees. Even if they didn't win, I was sad that, you know, Roma didn't win Best Picture. But Green Book looks like a good movie. So I'm okay with that.
Okay. Jeez Louise. Okay. Our next shout out goes to Hidden Figures hero Katherine Johnson for having a NASA facility renamed after her. And shout out to NASA for finally giving her her flowers as they are due. So the NASA facility, the NASA facility that will be renamed after her is the Independent Verification and Validation Center. And so they're, you know, historically, there was a time where NASA did not acknowledge, Katherine Johnson and all of the other Black women or Black people in general that had been involved and worked at NASA over the years. And then, you know, these stories kind of emerged with the Hidden Figures film. And since then, Katherine Johnson has received numerous accolades that she undoubtedly deserves. So shout out to her and NASA.
Yeah.
And then our last shout out goes to, I guess, Meek Mill. I don't really know what's going on. Like, apparently Meek Mill got a day in Houston. So there's like a Meek Mill day in Houston now as of a couple of days ago. I don't really know what that's about. I don't even know which day it is. But, you know, Zelma and I were talking, and since he got out of jail, like, he's been doing a lot for prison reform.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've seen a few of his interviews, and he's gotten a lot of his like millionaire and billionaire friends involved too. So he definitely, you know, deserves a shout out in general. And I hope he has a day in Philly. Like,
I'm sure.
Yeah, because it's like Houston is so random.
Yeah. Like Drake has one in Houston.
Yeah.
And, like,
yeah.
It's
weird. So they're just handing out days like candy, I guess. So shout out to Meek Mill, and I guess maybe shout out to Houston. I don't know. So now we'll transition to our In the Know segment. Extra, extra, read all about it. Okay, so now for our In the Know segment.
Yes. Oh, gosh. And so our first, so we have notes, and so I know what we're going to talk about, but I just, like, I am so sad about what we're going to talk about right now. But we feel like we owe it to our listeners because we did bring this up on this platform, and so we should discuss it.
Even though, even though at this point you've probably heard it talked about other places.
It's like, this news is probably, it's old by now, but I just felt responsible for talking about it again. Actually, my partner guilted me.
It's important, though. It's important. Yeah. If we put something out there, you know, because we're pretty obviously left-leaning, right? And so I think that we are very much in favor of believing the victim, like, period, you know, like, across the board. So it doesn't matter how things might look to us, doesn't matter what our, like, assessment is. It's like, no, you believe the victim because historically there have been too many victims that have been, you know, just kind of marginalized, and their stories have been neglected. So
So I'll always believe a victim, and if they turn out to be lying, then I don't want to in the future not believe someone. So if you haven't guessed by now, we're talking about the Jussie Smollett. Is it Jussie or Jussie?
Jussie sounds so... You just said it so fancy. Jussie.
Yeah.
I actually have no idea. Okay. I've been hearing people say Jussie. I haven't heard him say his own name, though.
So he's accused of... I'm saying accused because he hasn't, like, been fully convicted of orchestrating his own attack. So a couple episodes ago, we talked about this attack where he said... He claimed that two men, like, beat him up, sprayed... I think, like, chlorine on bleach on him, and then put a noose over his head, and, like, that it was a hate crime, and yelled, "This is MAGA country."
Yeah. But it was a homophobic and racist.
A homophobic and racist attack. Yeah. Motivated attack. So, if you don't know, as you know by now, or if you don't, he's an openly gay and black man who maintained he was the victim of a brutal hate crime, and this was late January. But after a daily array of twists and turns, he became a suspect and was charged with a felony for allegedly filing a false police report. A judge has set bond and ordered the actor to surrender his passport. Mm. So 1 week before the reported attack, a letter threatening him arrived at the Fox studio where Empire is filmed. The letter, which is later published by TMZ, of course, contained a homophobic death threat against him, spelled out in cut-up letters. The envelope read, "MAGA, Make America Great Again," an apparent reference to President Trump's slogan. But people are saying that this could also not be true.
Yeah.
He could have sent it to himself.
Yeah, I think so, but...
But this was 1 week before the attack.
So I missed that this came before the attack.
Yeah, it came before
the
attack.
So basically, this would suggest that he had been targeted when he was attacked.
Yes, or some people are saying that Fox didn't really give a shit when he got this threat. Mm-hmm. They were just like, let it go, and that he might have become angry that they weren't paying attention to him, and so he orchestrated this attack to kind of show that, like, hey, like, this is serious. Whereas other people are saying that, no, a little more cynical, that this was part of the orchestrating to show that he was... Gotcha. I kind of lean towards he did the... It would make sense for a non-insane person to be like, I'm angry that no one's caring that I'm a victim, and I'm going to show you that I'm
like,
a victim.
Like, I'm
going
to show you what could potentially have happened.
Yes, rather than out of nowhere just go to the depths of, like, writing my...
But this whole... If that's the case, then this whole attack, that would mean that he only planned it a week in advance.
Yes, yeah. I mean, and...
Did he?
By the way that
it was put together,
it doesn't seem like he put that much thought into it.
Oh, gosh, Jussie.
Like, getting people he knew instead of just getting, like, strangers where they would...
Yeah, and then also, you're going to get two random black men.
Yeah, I know.
Like, that just... Yeah, I was just like, wait, what? Like, why are these two random-ass Nigerian guys? Like, what? And like, my thing was, like, he's an actor. Like, you're an actor. Why did this seem like a very I mean, allegedly, right? Yeah. Allegedly. Why did this seem like a good, like it was something that was well concocted? Like, this just seems half-baked.
Yeah, like a bad episode. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
So a source close to the investigation told CBS News that two Nigerian brothers, Ola and Abel Osundaro, told detectives that he paid them to participate in the attack. They say that the rope that was found around his neck was purchased at a nearby hardware store, and that a raid of their home turned out ropes, masks, and bleach, which is the alleged liquid that was poured on him. So Fox announced it was nixing his character from the final two episodes of season 5, which is set to resume in March. While many have been critical of Jesse, there are those who voice their support for him, especially about not wanting him to go to jail. And so I think that that's where people are now. People are more like past the, did he do it or not? And to the point of, am I still going to support him? Or do I even want, am I mad enough to want him to go to jail? And what some people bring up is that there have been lots of white people who have made false claims. And not about themselves, but about other people, and that nothing has happened to them.
Yeah.
The most that I've seen, you know, is people have get like suspended or fired from their job, but no one's gone to jail for it.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I'm very disappointed. I'm still gonna reserve, you know, wait to see till everything comes out to kind of make my final judgment as to his state of mind and whether he was a shitty person for doing this. Because, you know, if this, like I said, if this was a response to him feeling like no one was paying attention to the threats he was getting, I kind of can understand that. But definitely, like, makes it harder for other victims to want to come forward.
Yeah.
And so I think if black, you know, black men didn't want to come forward before, then they might not want to come forward now because they might not be taking this seriously.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I do think that he has put, people have been saying, you know, one of the biggest consequences of his actions is that it kind of puts a lot of gay people in a really, or people, victims of assault, sexual assault, hate crimes in a very, like, precarious, like, position. Because it's, you know, yeah, it's like the boy who cried wolf, right? But, you know, to another point that you made, yes, I think that they're, I mean, historically, right, we think about Carolyn Bryant. Carolyn Bryant is old as dirt, but is still very much alive and kicking.
Yeah.
Has a book that's going to be published when she dies. Okay. About, you know, talking about how she lied about Emmett Till and all that stuff, which ultimately resulted in his death. She, you know, like, she's still breathing. Ed Buck has lied and has killed, like, you know, it's, there's just so, you cannot deny that there are tons of people who have evaded the law and have done illegal things. And I don't think that, while I think that Jesse is absolutely 100% wrong for what he did and should have to, there's, I don't know, he should have to have some kind of consequences, like pay something, or, you know, I feel like he probably will lose his job or something, because, I mean, his show is on Fox, so it's like,
he's gonna be, like, written off, he's gonna die mysteriously next season.
Yeah, it's like, very, I mean, it just, again, this was not very well thought out, and we know exactly who our president is, and how he was formerly a, I mean, I guess I wouldn't call him an actor, but would I call him an actor?
A celebrity.
Some kind
a
of reality celebrity. Star. Yeah.
I'm going to call him a reality
star. Yeah, and has hella connections, and he has tweeted about how personally offended he was by what Jesse has done.
Yeah.
So I'm sure that he'll make it his business.
Yeah.
to,
so that he gets severely punished.
Yeah. So it's like, yeah, I think that Jesse is going to have a really hard time getting work from here on out. So he'll be punished. He'll be punished. I don't think that he needs to go to jail. Like, there are plenty of people that need to be in jail that aren't, you know, for murder, for rape, for, you know, and I am definitely a proponent of two things can be wrong, you know, like, so you, like, I'm not saying that, oh, because these other people didn't go to jail, he shouldn't go to jail either. No, not necessarily. But the law is supposed to be unbiased. You know, and it's supposed to kind of be value-free. And if it's supposed to apply to everyone and it isn't, then we should not just be throwing, you know... I don't know. I don't know if you should just be thrown in jail for a lie that didn't necessarily directly hurt anybody but yourself.
Yeah.
Like, come on.
Like, pay a fine. Like,
yeah.
A hefty fine.
Yeah, and I think there might be something wrong with him. Yeah. Because apparently he showed up at the Empire studio and a lot of the I would love to know who the cast members are that want him fired, because apparently there are some apparently some of the cast members are like, oh, you put us through so much, like, you know, emotionally and all this stuff, like they want him fired. And he apparently broke down and was like, you know, had like a breakdown and was saying like, I didn't lie. So he's going through it. He's going through it. And it's like, if it comes out that he for sure lied and yet he's still doing stuff like that, like he's doubling and tripling down on this, then there might just be something wrong with him.
Yeah. No, I agree.
Yeah. And so...
Yeah, so we'll keep you guys updated. I'm sure, like, once they figure out... This is going to have some sort of resolution with either him coming forward and confessing or with him just saying that he's being, you know, targeted, and there's just so much evidence against him that it just seems like he's, one way or another, he's going to get charged. I don't know if he's going to go to jail, but I'm pretty sure he's going to get charged for this.
Yeah.
So our next story is about Venezuela, and so this isn't that, it hasn't taken as much spotlight in the news, but Venezuela is facing a humanitarian crisis. So there's humanitarian aid that is sent from the U.S. and other countries to Venezuela, but they are currently stuck at the Colombia and Brazilian border because there's a standoff between the current president, President Maduro, and Mr. Guaido, who is a guy who declared himself president. So there are two guys that are saying they are president. There's intense political turmoil. There are people who are starving and dying from lack of adequate health care. And so the current president, Maduro, is refusing any aid. And essentially, his pride is killing his people. And so the context of this is that the leader of the legislature, Juan Guaido, declared himself acting president and said he would assume the powers of the executive branch starting from 2018, where they had this re-election where it was super obvious that it was fraudulent. So Maduro was the president after he won an election. Then there was a re-election in 2018. He claimed that he won by like over 90%, even though a lot of people claimed that they showed video that they weren't allowed to enter buildings to vote. It was just like straight up fraud. So a lot of people got mad and said, there's no way that this is legit. So as a result, Juan Guaido said, well, fuck that. I'm going to be president because this is corrupt. And this move was a direct challenge to the power of President Maduro, who had been sworn in for his second term just 2 weeks prior. And so why do we care about this? Well, other than just like the humanitarian crisis happening to people, the U.S. of course is involved. So President Trump officially recognized Juan Guaido as the legitimate president of Venezuela just minutes after he said he would take over the executive powers. So he was one of the only a couple of countries had like stepped in, and the U.S. does what it always does and steps into another country's political, problems and said, okay, well, we're going to choose this guy that we like more to be president, recognize him as president. And so a lot of Hispanic people really, really shit themselves with Trump, saying like, thank God, like, look at Trump, like, he's doing something right. I think this was a very smart move on behalf of Trump to try to gain a certain percentage of the Latino population, because he definitely won a lot of favor. There was a lot of Latino people who were very critical of Trump that now said that they, you know, are willing to work with him. And so as a result, Maduro refused to accept the humanitarian aid provided for his Venezuelans, leaving his people dying of hunger. And then according to the United Nations figures, 3 million Venezuelans have already left the country since 2014 when the economic crisis started to bite. And so Venezuela has been in turmoil since their socialist governments have been in power since 1999, taking over the country at a time when Venezuela had huge inequality. So that's why a lot of Americans are like wanting to step in, because this is a socialist country that is seeing the negative effects of what happens when socialist policies are brought into place with corrupt people at the charge. So a lot of people are saying like, hey, this is, a lot of people in the comments back and forth have been saying, this is an example of why socialism or communism doesn't work. And for me, I'm just kind of like, no, this is an example of when you get like a dictator and a really corrupt government who says that they want to help poor people put in policies that aren't very helpful. Mm-hmm. And so in the end, it's not just like socialism itself that doesn't work, but it's just like human nature that's kind of like fucking it up. And so I've seen this firsthand because one of my best friends is from Venezuela and most of her family has left. They're either in Spain or Colombia, but she does have some people who stay behind because the people who tend to stay behind are people who are older, people who like don't really want to leave their country because they've been really established. So she was telling me how she has an uncle who has cancer and that they've just accepted he's going to die, even though his uncle is a doctor. But they don't have like the materials or the resources to be able to treat his cancer. So, and of course, his sons and his daughters are not in Venezuela anymore because if you want, they're going to school outside in different countries because there isn't really much that can be done in that country. And they can't enter the country again because of the instability. So they've just, the dad has decided, well, I'm going to die because I don't have the resources. And the children are kind of like, well, my dad's going to die and I won't be able to see him because I won't be able to enter the country to see him. And it's all because there's this political, like, instability. And so, I don't know, I'm interested in this on a personal note, but also interested in this as, like, I think that Trump is being very deliberate in his involvement because none of the past presidents have chosen to get as involved other than just sanctioning Venezuela. But by the U.S. is such a recognizable country, like such a, it still holds, like the opinion of the United States matters a lot to a lot of countries. And so for the U.S. president to say that I'm recognizing this person adds more weight to the political turmoil. And so the United States has a history of backing up certain political figures that they favor and then like totally putting all their resources into the civil war and then leaving. So I'm kind of afraid that that's what's going to happen in Venezuela. Like they are headed into a civil war and I'm just really afraid that it's just going to get worse for this country. And it's like right in the middle of South America. So that is just going to spread to other, there's just so much that happens when one country is in turmoil. And I don't think a lot of people understand that. And so my heart goes out to all like the millions of Venezuelans that are watching this happen outside on their televisions and for other Venezuelans that are in there. So just wanted to give like a brief historical context to Venezuela. I know like it seems out of nowhere to talk about Venezuela because it's not something that we're more focused on, like the Mexico politics and the Central American politics, but I just wanted to highlight that like the United States is involved in lots of countries' shit. Yeah. And so I think that when we only focus, when the news only focuses on what the U.S. is doing in Mexico and not what the U.S. is doing in Venezuela, then we're also like we're putting blood in our hands when we as a country are involving ourselves with the political fights of other countries. And if we are choosing to involve ourselves, then we need to fully involve ourselves in the recovery as well. But I can bet $100 million that we're just going to walk away once like, you know, if we do, if they do overthrow this president and then the whole economy collapses even further and they have to restart a government, the United States is just going to walk away like they've done to so many other countries.
You would be a wealthy woman.
Yeah. So yeah, we'll definitely keep that updated, but just wanted to kind of highlight that for those, for you guys to get like a quick 5-minute recap of what's happening in Venezuela, just because I feel like that's really important and that this will play in Trump's election for 2020.
What do you think is the benefit, though? That's what I'm wondering. Like, to him, like who is this appeasing?
Cubans, but anyone who came from a socialist country. Okay. Or I've even seen a lot of Latinos who aren't Venezuelans, like a lot of South Americans who are just like, oh, well, he's done more for Venezuela than like Obama did. Like Obama didn't even want to do anything or say anything against Maduro. He didn't even say, he could have just like also been as involved, even though like the election, it's just, I don't know. I just feel like a lot of people, it's hindsight's 2020. So it's really easy to say, oh, this other president should have done this. We should have done more. But the fact that Trump actually went through a tweet is like standing behind this other guy makes him look like a good guy to a lot of Latinos. And so a lot of Latinos have, I think, short memories and are willing to say, well, this is a good thing, so he's not all bad, or he doesn't hate all Latinos.
Yeah. Same with the whole, like, so I think that people have to be very critical of their evaluation of Trump this, you know, this year, this close to like the election period, because, or like the period where people are about to start campaigning and things, because it's like there are things that he has not done over the last 2 years that he's suddenly like pretending to care about.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, okay, so he's throwing up these pictures of like the border wall. It is like, oh, look, progress is being made, doing stuff with prison reform. Like he is like, he's pandering, you know? And I think that people are gonna fall for it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they are. I've definitely seen it on social media where my friends are having discussions about communism and about Trump being good, and I'm just like, are we talking about the same guy who's literally building a border on Mexico? But then they're like, well, he can't be racist against Latinos if he cares about the humanitarian crisis happening in this Latino country. So that's why I think like he's being really smart. By doing one good thing among this group of people, he can say, I don't hate all Latinos. Yeah, it's just not, bad guys.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And that's how I feel. I was like, so this weekend my partner was like, oh well, did you hear about what Trump is doing with prison reform? Like he's doing more than Clinton and Bush did. You know, he's doing more maybe even than Obama did. Like, so maybe we should rethink our loyalty. And I'm like, what? No, not because he's doing this one thing at the very last minute. Yeah. Like, he's like, oh, just throw everything in. Just throw everything in and let's see what sticks. No.
Yeah. So I'll definitely keep an eye on this. And I'm sure I'm going to talk about it in the future. But just like whenever Trump does something, it's always about his 2020 campaign. And so we
take
have
it with
to,
a grain of salt.
Yeah, we have to be very careful about not giving him too much credit when he does things.
Definitely.
Like that.
I mean, you don't have to completely dismiss it, but just evaluate it critically. Like, don't just be convinced by the headlines and the tweets.
Yep. So our next story is about R. Kelly.
This R. Kelly situation is disgusting. So R. Kelly, as y'all probably know, was charged with aggravated criminal sexual abuse, and he was arrested and put in jail. Well, actually, I think, did he? Yeah. He was arrested and put in jail, and he remained behind bars after being charged and because he was unable to post his bail, which was set at $100,000. I thought that was really interesting that he did not have the money to do that. I don't know why I was surprised. But yeah, so this $100,000 was 10% of his $1 million bond. And so so Kelly, who's 52, surrendered to police at 8:15 p.m. Friday night, hours after being charged with 10 counts of aggravated criminal sexual abuse. Some of the charges stem from newly discovered video found by attorney Michael Avenatti that allegedly shows Kelly having sex with a 14-year-old girl. And apparently, I haven't seen this video, but apparently throughout this video, he is constantly referring to her vagina as being 14 years old. So there's no way that he could claim. There's no way that he could claim that like he didn't know. It was like I don't know. It's like he was trying to go to jail. So so he was bailed out by a woman named Valencia Love, who says that she is a friend of his, and I guess she raised the money with a GoFundMe. But even more disturbing, I mean, that's disturbing, right? But then even more disturbing is that while he was in jail, apparently there were women, like fans and things like that, that were calling up to the jail to ask how they can help to bail him out. So this is like, I mean, I don't even know what kind of mental ailment has to be plaguing these women for them to, you know, see that a man is charged with sexual abuse,
see all of these allegations coming out against him and still feel compelled to bail him out of jail. Like, what is going... I'm so... And I mean, I'm assuming, I don't know these women, but my assumption is that they're Black and that they're, like, 35 plus and just completely out of their minds. Yeah. And so Zumo was saying, and I hadn't heard about this, but not surprised at all, that two of the, what'd you call them, sister wives, were in court. Yeah. Were in court there to support him. And I'm like, oh, yeah. They for sure have that, what is it called again? Yes, they for sure have that syndrome, because it's like, how can someone abuse you for years and then you show up to court to defend and support him? I don't even know. And it's like, how can we as like a, you know, a society or whatever culture, I guess, generation, I don't know, push for, you know, better treatment and rights for women when you have women like this undermining that movement? I don't understand. It's like, we're advocating and fighting on your behalf. You are undermining that against your own best interest. It's hella, I mean, to say it's troubling would be putting it lightly. Like, I am concerned. I'm very concerned. Yeah, it's just...
Yeah, no, I thought he was going to stay in jail. See, yeah. This with Michael Jackson, with people saying that the kids were lying, that they just wanted a payday.
Yeah, I definitely think that there's some of that, like what you're saying, like kind of the idea that the white man has held us back or held us down and all of these things, and that's the reason why we should give one another passes. And I think that that's ridiculous. Like, I mean, because if we allow behavior like this to take place in our community and there is no accountability, who's protecting, like, the next generation? If you have older men plotting on young girls and we are defending the older men at the expense of the young girls, who's protecting them? Nobody. Like, we just, like, you know, it's just like, no, like, they... I don't know. And a lot of this, I mean, this behavior, I think this is a very good, we're going to come back to touch on this again in our What's Being Slept On segment, because I think that a lot of this behavior is something that are things that the older women experienced as kids, and they're kind of just repeating it. They're repeating a toxic cycle, you know, because like if they weren't protected, and now it's like, well, like the blaming the victim thing, I think, is something that they, like, a lot of older women have experienced, and they are just, I don't know. They don't know how to break the cycle. Scary. I'm hoping that, I don't know, God, it's like this man should obviously be convicted, right? But things like this make me fearful that it may not happen. Like, he might get away with this shit. I could imagine that people will be just like that first time that he went to court, how they showed in the video all the women outside protesting. I'm sure that it's gonna be that times 10. And then, also the piece that we cannot forget to talk about is how this man just, oh my God, he just gives no fucks at all, went from court or from jail to the McDonald's where he used to prey on teenage girls. And then apparently there were young girls, like teenagers from the high school across the street, coming and taking pictures with him, selfies and stuff. And I'm like, you guys are 16. How do you even know, like, anything about this man? How do you care anything about this man? Like, that's so weird, right? Like, he's 50. He's 50. Why are you, as a 15-year-old, shouldn't you be listening to, I don't even know, who? All these, like, I don't know. I don't know who they should be listening to, but it definitely isn't R. Kelly. Anyways, so yeah, we'll keep y'all updated on this trash, because this is just the beginning.
So our final story for our In the Know segment is on about Michael Cohen and his testimony. For those of you who didn't watch it, or he is President Trump's former lawyer. So the context on him is that he has already pled guilty to lying to Congress about the Russia investigation. So he's scheduled to turn himself in soon. And he's going to do some jail time. However, the circumstances of this particular hearing are due to his cooperation with Special Counselor Mueller, and it was as a result of Congress wanting him to give a testimony on, like, kind of what he knows about the alleged crimes that Trump has done. And so he, it was like all day. I watched most of it, and they took like a 2-hour break. But if you, you know, for those of you who watched on TV, it was just congressman after congresswoman after congressman. Just they each got 5 minutes to ask him questions on anything, yeah. And he responded, and he was under oath. So during his testimony, he basically said that. He painted a harsh portrait of the president as an unscrupulous businessman who may have committed crimes while in office. So he claimed that as a candidate, Trump knew that his longtime confidant, Roger Stone, was talking with Julian Assange about WikiLeaks' revealing of emails from the Democratic National Committee. So that would mean that Trump orchestrated this, like, he was manipulating public opinion to be negative about Hillary Clinton. And then Cohen also called Trump a racist, a con man, and a cheat. He said that Trump did, in fact, pay off Stormy Daniels, the porn star, that he did have an affair with her, that he did lie about the ways that he was handling his finances, and that he even implicated that the sons and daughters of Trump are also probably involved in these crimes that Trump is being accused of. Mm-hmm. And so, ultimately, Cohen said that he was trying to tell the truth because he wanted redemption, that he felt bad for his role in kind of the Trump being who he was, and he, you know, he even went as far as to tell the Republicans that he used to be like them, like never talking against Trump, always supporting him, and now he could no longer do that with good conscience, which of course made the Republicans mad, and all they focused on was that he was a liar, that the reason that he's going to jail, so he took a plea deal, basically he admitted to perjury. Yeah. And so they were kind of speculating that he was only doing this because he got, it's part of his deal. So kind of like you turn on Trump, you get less jail time. So we shouldn't really take what he says with a grain of salt. Mm-hmm. And of course the Democrats went hard about like wanting to know specifically whether he could tell us if Trump did in fact commit crimes. So it was kind of like the soap opera.
Yeah.
And I think that what I got from it, watching the 3 or more hours that I watched, is that Trump definitely committed crimes. But do I think that things are going to happen because of that? No. I just think, like, this is only one section of the government. The Senate still has a big say in, like, in the impeachment process and actually holding Trump accountable. And from what I saw, Republicans are sticking together, and it's going to take a lot more. Like, Republicans, a lot of people who are on Trump's camp don't really care about facts anymore. Like, you can prove to them that Trump committed a crime, but that doesn't mean that they want anything to happen. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people just want to move on. So that was kind of sad, but, you know, just like following like so many of the stories that we talk about, there's more that's going to come from this. I'm sure for the next week or so, people are just going to be talking about it. And ultimately, one of the questions they asked him was, you know, are you going to write a book about this? And he said, yeah. And so I was like,
already been approached.
Yeah, and so I was just kind of like, okay, well, you know, I mean, I don't hate him for it. Like, I want to read what he has to say. Who else would know his secrets but the president's attorney?
Yeah.
So I think the saddest part for me was when he was talking about his family, saying that if he could, the one thing he regrets is how this affected his family, the biggest thing he regrets. And if he could go back in time, he wouldn't do any of this. And he was, like, choking up. And it's really hard for me to see, like, most people cry, but seeing, like, however old he is, man,
yeah,
crying, and, like, the camera's just focusing on him, and there being that silence, like, you kind of feel bad for him. And so, I don't know. We'll see what happens. I mean, he ultimately, like, let's not forget, he was with Trump for a really long time.
Yeah.
So he was an active participant in lying to the American public, in lying to Congress, in lying to law enforcement. And so he does have to pay for this. But I do think that he does feel bad.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
Did you believe him? Like, were there any moments where you questioned, like, whether
he... I believe him because there was one moment where he talked about how people were saying that there was a video of Trump hitting Melania in the elevator.
Hitting her?
And he said that, yeah, he said that that's not true. He said that that's a rumor and that the Trump that he knows would never lay a hand on Melania.
Okay.
You know, he didn't have to say that, but he was like, really, he was like, I just want that to be clear. Like, he would never ever do something like that.
Yeah.
And so I was like, oh, okay. But the fact that there was like, I know when I just heard that there was this video, I was like, where is it? I want to see it.
Yeah.
You know, maybe people will care about that. But he said it wasn't true, and that he was very, very aggressive in telling people that that's not within Trump's character.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
So that's why I believed him, because he didn't just, like, shit-talk Trump all the time. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I was, like, initially, I was like, oh, my gosh, like, could this potentially get Trump, you know, like, impeached? Like, will there be, you know, is this just the straw that broke the camel's back? And as satisfying as it would be to see Trump get impeached, his replacement would be worse. And I'm like,
yeah,
we have already been through so much. We do not need it. We can do without a year and a half of Pence. Like, if what comes from this is that Trump doesn't get reelected, I feel like that would be a win.
Yeah.
But yeah, well, I mean, we will sit tight and see what Congress does with this, I guess.
Yep.
Yeah.
Probably nothing, we'll still keep you guys updated.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that wraps up our In the Know segment, and now we will transition into our What's Being Slept On segment.
And we'll be back.
So I strongly suggest that you wake the fuck up.
Okay, so now for our What's Being Slept On segment. So we are talking about relationships and outgrowing them, whether that be friendships or partners, even relationships with family, etc. And part of what we'll be talking about are toxic relationships and how to deal with that.
Yeah, starting out, we just want to talk about, like, reasons, like, we might outgrow the relationship. And this can be about, like Ebony said, like, friendships, partners with significant partnerships, or your relationship with your significant other. And we're even going to talk about, like, this, you know, you may not agree, but, like, even some family relationships. Mm-hmm. And so these are just a couple of things that I thought of when I am thinking back about relationships that I felt that I outgrew. And these are some of the reasons that I kind of, you know, in thinking about these relationships, found that kind of pointed towards maybe it was time to end them. And so the first one is that, you know, it's time to outgrow your relationship when the only thing you have in common is the past. And so there have been especially friendships, where I stay friends with someone only because, like, our moms knew each other. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, we went to the same middle school. And I think, like, if you even look, an example of this is looking at your Facebook friends or your Instagram friends, and I'm sure you can see a lot of people there who you only, the only thing that you have in common right now are the fact that you guys, like, went to this high school or were on this team or did, you know, go to camp. And so that's one of the things that came to mind for me in talking and thinking about if it was time to outgrow a relationship, if I had outgrown a relationship. Mm-hmm. Then the next was, you know, when you run out of things to talk about. And so this, I think for me is, you know, going to grad school, there would be times where, you know, your life just, your interest and you spend your time doing different things. And so there are people in my life who we used to, it felt like we used to be able to talk about a lot of things. But, I mean, and a great example is, like, becoming a parent. And so there are things that, there are, like, people now that, like, I just don't have, you know, they tell me about how they, like, went, you know, they went out and they stayed out till, like, 4 a.m. And how, like, one of my friends was talking about how she, like, went to a, it was 11 p.m. and she still hadn't started her night. She's like, I'm about to get ready to go out. And it's just kind of like, yeah, I'm on, like, you know, at 11, I'm already, the baby's already sleeping. I'm already on my second feeding of the night. Like, and no one wants to hear me talk about that. I'm not going to tell you, like, oh, yeah, I leaked milk today. And, like, the baby threw up, you know. Sometimes they're just in a certain relationship, you just don't have things to talk about. Mm-hmm. And that leads into kind of my next point, which is when you're in different places in your life. And so the transition into different places can be difficult when it changes the dynamic of the friendship. So me being a parent now, me being in graduate school, getting my PhD, me being in a relationship, all those different transitions have kind of impacted my relationship with other people. And that doesn't mean that, you know, there aren't people in my life. Like, I still have friends who are single. I have friends who aren't parents. I have friends who aren't in grad school. But there are those certain relationships that, like, don't, I guess, stand the test of time, that, you know, they don't evolve with me. When I don't feel supported by people, I feel like if you can't help support me, it may be because maybe, one, you're not able to, or two, you don't want to. And so those are, to me, are two reasons why, like, I don't need to have you. And, like, maybe we don't need to be best friends anymore or really close friends if you're not really supporting me in the points I am in my life. Mm-hmm. What about you? What do you feel about, like, relationships that you've outgrown or reasons why you've outgrown relationships?
Yeah, I think that all of those, so I echo all those things that you said, and I guess I'll add that I think that sometimes the, like, so if you transition, if you go through a life transition, right, and people don't necessarily agree with that transition, like, maybe they don't agree with who you're in a relationship with, or, you know, whether they don't agree with you, like, say, moving, or pursuing a certain career, or just certain decisions, you know, and so those kinds of things can make a relationship kind of rocky, because then when you're talking about this new thing in your life or this decision that you made, they aren't able to, like you said, support you and things like that. So I think that kind of people's not being supportive of choices can make a friendship difficult. And I think when you change as a person, you know, so like if you go through a certain experience that matures you, you look at or think about life differently, or just understand the world differently, and your friends haven't experienced that change, you know, it may seem like you're a different person or like a new person or things like that. And vice versa, like you might look at someone and not really understand them anymore, or like just the vibe is different because they've gone through something that kind of changed the way that they looked at life, changed the values maybe, you know, and things like that. Like, I think that there are, for instance, like, I don't think I have any friends like this, but I could imagine, for example, like if there is a friend, maybe two people that have been best friends growing up and throughout high school, and one friend goes off to college and one friend doesn't, and one friend, like the friend that doesn't, stays at home with their parents. It's like that the person that goes off to college, their perspective on life and their ideas and their personality, things are going to change, you know? And I think that sometimes that can be strain a friendship. I guess my question would be, though, do you think that outgrowing a person or going through different life changes necessarily means that the friendship has to end? And I think also end is kind of tricky because sometimes it can be like, you know, one of the people in the relationship like actively ending it versus it kind of fading over time because y'all are different, you know?
Yeah. No, I think that's a good question. And that kind of goes into the next kind of part that I want to talk about, which is like you're actually cutting people out. Yeah. And I, you know, in reading, I like reading about like what, you know, psychologists, bloggers, social media have to say about each topic. So when I was looking up about this topic, one of the things that I came across that I really liked is someone, it was like a blogger, and she was talking about how some relationships don't have to end, they just transition, like, or you redefine them. Yeah. And so I think one good example is, like, this is an example of when I was transitioned out. And that's, like, you know, I had friends growing up who joined the Marines, and we were really close. Like, we would go bar hopping, like, it was really, we would actually, like, go out, talk about, like, we would joke, talk about folks go out drinking. And then, you know, slowly, you know, they would go to tour, they would come back, settle in their job. I went to graduate school. We tried to hang out, but, like, we had not a lot in common anymore. And when I even tried to talk about, like, hey, so how was it there? They'd be like, I don't really want to talk about that. Mm-hmm. And so I was, like, our relationship, like, redefined. And so, you know, I invited them to my baby shower. I still, like, you know, if I post an Instagram video, they'll comment on it. Whenever I post updates about school, they'll comment on my statuses. But I do notice, like, I don't get invited out because now they have their new, like, you know, ex-military crew. Yeah. And I was like, oh, man, I got cut out of that. I'm usually, like, you know, in thinking about, like, me cutting people out, I also thought about, well, relationships where I've been transitioned out. And so they didn't stop being my friends, but our relationship was redefined. Yeah. And so, and it was like a slow transition where I just didn't get invited out anymore. Yeah. And our communication was solely via social media. So I know, like, today, if something happened to me and I called them, they would come. Yeah. But I also know that, like, I really don't know the day-to-day of what's going on with them, and they don't know the day-to-day of me. And so we're not friends in the same way. And so I really, when I read about relationships, redefining relationships or transitioning them to a different dynamic, I really liked that because I agree. There are some relationships that don't need to end. They just need to be transitioned unless it's with a significant other. I do not think that it is, for me, I don't stay really close. My relationships with exes aren't like, I don't stay friends with them. Yeah. I like just end it and don't transition to like friendship. So for me, like, that's the one relationship where it's like, if we're no longer together, I'm not gonna like Facebook message you and say happy birthday and like, you know, invite you to my baby shower. Like, you're just done.
Yeah.
But no, I think that was a good point about like transitioning the relationship versus ending it.
Yeah, I like that. I guess I think that you are a person who is like mature enough to handle that, but I could imagine that there are certain people or within friendships where one person doesn't want to be a part of a transition. You know, in times, like when one person might want to maintain the relationship, but just change it, you know, so that it's like, okay, well, we aren't necessarily best buds anymore, but we're still friends. Other person in the friendship might be resistant to that and then just kind of cut it off cold turkey because it's like, no, I want the friendship in this way. It can't be in that way. So now we aren't going to be friends at all.
Yeah. No, and I think like, because this happened in my later 20s, I handle it better than were this to happen when I was 19. Mm. Because I feel like if I were just like, you know, sometimes I see on social media and I'm like, oh, they went out. Like, I remember going out with them. Yeah. And if I was 19 or 20 and I saw that, I'd be like, what? Yeah. Like, how dare they? Like, I'd be super offended.
Yeah.
As opposed to thinking like, Well, I mean, that makes sense. I haven't talked to them in a long time. Like, why would they invite me to go out drinking? No, but I think you're right. And it's also, like, contingent on the person, too. Like, some people can't. And I think, you know, that's one of my other points is, like, it's going, cutting people out of your life or transitioning them is going to be hard, either for you or for the other person. Yeah. And so I think that to... You know, this is an example of that happening well, but I also, you know, there have been examples where I had to, like, block someone because they did not take the transition of the ending our communication well. And so I had to, like, block phone numbers, block social media. Like, they even found me through email. Wow. And so it was just kind of like, you know, just, and I think the problem with that is I wasn't as direct as I should have been. I tried the whole ghosting thing, like, yeah. I'm just going to talk to you less, and then we're not going to be, you know, as close, as opposed to just telling them, you know, hey, I just don't think that we're, like, our relationship has changed, don't you feel it? And so one of my other points about seeing people in your life is that, you know, ending a relationship isn't a science. Each relationship is different, and every situation requires a different approach. So, yeah, like, your best friend of 15 years, don't ghost her. Yeah. Like, if you feel like you guys have grown apart, like, have a real conversation.
Yeah.
But, like, some person that you dated for 6 months, and you're like, I don't know why, we don't need to keep in touch every 3 months. Yeah, like, maybe you can just, like, unfriend them and unfollow them, and that could be a way that you transition out.
Yeah, I think that's the tricky part, and I think that that's where things get kind of difficult a lot of the time, or tense, is when the communication is bad, you know? So it's like I think that a lot of times people are afraid just kind of ghost. And I could say that, you know, I've never, like, ended a friendship, but I have been in friendships where I felt like in this particular moment and have kind of just distanced myself because I don't want the conflict or because I don't think that we're going to I don't think that we're going to agree on, you know, the fact that there's an issue, you know, and then to avoid conflict, I'll just be like, all right, I'm gonna not say anything. I don't even think I actively or, like, consciously think about it. It just, over time, you know, happens where it's like, yeah, like, I didn't really like how she talked to me in this moment, or I felt disrespected or whatever. Rather than being, like, completely upfront about that initially, I'll be like, just, that's not the person that I think to call when something happens. You know what I'm saying? I do recognize that those communication strategies are not effective. And I think that a lot of times when that can translate over into, you know, ending a friendship or even trying to, you know, transition it into something else. I can't imagine, though, how a conversation like that would even go, though. Because, like, not being friends with someone anymore, I feel like that's a pretty cut and dry kind of conversation. Like, I don't think we're on the same page anymore. I think we've grown apart, whatever, whatever. But how do you have a conversation about kind of demoting a friend? You know, like, friend anymore, now we're just regular friends.
Yeah, I don't know. I've never had to have that conversation, like, so bluntly.
Yeah.
It was just more like, you know, you check in on them less and less. For me, it was like, I check in on you less and less.
Yeah.
I, you know, and it was school, I guess, we kind of have a cop-out because we just say, sorry, I've been so busy with school. Yeah. And people just kind of write that off. Or, like, having a baby. Sorry, you know, like, my days have just been crazy.
Yeah.
But I've kind of been able to find passive-aggressive ways to just, like, you know, transition people away.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'd be interested in anyone who's ever had to have that conversation about, like, hey, I don't think that you should be in my life. Because I have yet to have that. But I definitely would admire someone who's, like, ballsy enough to do that, because I do think that sometimes the healthiest thing is to let someone know and be like, hey, we're just in different places. And it's not just, you know, for me, like, don't you feel it too? But I've never had that conversation. So I don't know. I'm with you. Like, I would wonder how that would go. But I've just, like, thankfully never had to be that confrontational. And then, you know, just don't, you know, once you decide to redefine your relationship, whether it is to transition or end, then make a firm commitment. Don't be wishy-washy. Like, don't tell someone, like, hey, you know, I just think that we've outgrown each other. And then, like, next week call them and be like, hey, do you want to go out? Do you want to do this? Like, if you're going to, yeah, or like, hey, I don't think we're friends anymore. And then be like, hey, do you want to be a bridesmaid? Like, it's just, you know, you don't want to send mixed messages. You want to be very clear about, like, you are either in my life or you're not, because then that other person might not, you know, might get confused and be like, well, I must be important enough because she invited me to, you know, her baby shower, but she claims we're not friends anymore.
Yeah.
So, like, that's the final point, I think, that you need to be aware in deciding to cut people who are out of your life. It's like, you know, if you're ready to cut someone or to transition someone, you know, make sure that this is something that you want to commit to from here on out, because it's not healthy and it's not fair to the other person to, like, backtrack and change your mind. So the next thing we wanted to talk about is, like, getting rid of toxic relationships. And so this is not just, like, you don't have things in common, you know, you're in different places in your life, they're not supporting you. But this is, like, people who resent you, people who seem to only judge you or criticize you. You know, sometimes you can feel stuck in a relationship because you're related or because you've been friends for so long. So this gets kind of complicated when it comes to family, because I can already think of a lot of people, like, you know, judge you, or who, like, you only bring, you know, you bring up something and they're like, you know, like, I'm getting a master's. Oh, yeah, but it's not a PhD. Oh, I'm getting a PhD. Oh, yeah, but it's not an MD. You know, it's just kind of like there are some people who are kind of negative.
Yeah.
But if they're related to you, then how do you how do you transition out of being family? So, you know, for me, unluckily and luckily, you know, we're a family of immigrants, so I don't have a lot of family here. We only have a handful of family, so I don't have a lot of people that, like, the people that I communicate with are via Facebook.
Yeah.
So there's not that much interaction to as it becomes negative.
Yeah.
But I could definitely see how difficult it could be if, you know, your toxic relationship with your sister or, like, your mom or your grandma. It's like, you can't really, like, how do you really break up with your mom?
That just sounds so sad. Yeah, no, I think that this, you know, this particular topic is really near and dear to my heart, because I feel like, you know, this whole notion of, like, toxic relationships is fairly new, I feel like. Like, I don't feel like I was hearing about this before, you know, a few years ago with, like, Instagram and all that stuff. And you see all these memes about toxic, like, toxic relationships and, you know, protecting your energy and all that stuff. But even though I didn't have a name for it, I feel like this was something that I practiced and embraced, like, a long time ago, because I always kind of felt this way about at least family. You know, it's like I was actually listening to another podcast recently. Amanda Seale's podcast, and she was saying that, you know, that for her, there's a big difference between being family and being a relative, and that oftentimes we give people more credit than they deserve just because we so happen to be born related to them, you know? And it's like, you, like, they haven't necessarily done anything family-like, but because they are your aunt or your uncle or, you know, your grandparent or cousin or something like that, you feel an obligation to them when you didn't necessarily choose them. And so another thing that she was talking about was, like, you know, having a chosen family, like your friends who become family. And I think that those are really critical points and things that I definitely agree with, because I think that a lot of times the people that can make us feel the worst are people that we are related to. And that we, again, feel like an obligation to stay connected with, because, like, you know, we see them at family functions and things like that, but they always have, you know, negative things to say or a way of putting you down or, like Zama was saying, judging you. And I think that we should practice the same things. Like, if you wouldn't accept that kind of treatment from someone who is a friend or someone that you aren't related to, you should not accept that treatment from someone who is related to you. Like, you should hold, I feel like they should be held to an even higher standard. Like, you, as my family, should be pouring love into me, not, you know, negativity or judgment or whatever. And a lot of times, I feel like a lot of that mistreatment is misplaced. You know, like, it can be, as Zama said, resentment or envy, or, you know, maybe they were treated that way when they were, you know, when they were coming up or something like that, and they don't really know how to treat people any different. But I think that with family, I think that a lot of times with family, because they know, like, oh, this is, you know, we're related, you're my blood, you can't go anywhere, they don't feel pressured to treat you well. But I think for that very same reason, it's even more imperative, and I think should be easier to communicate with those people about how dissatisfied you are with your relationship. Because, again, because, like, in the same way that they're probably thinking, they're family. So even if you tell them, like, yo, why, like, you know, why are you always coming at me sideways? Why do you always have something to say about my what I'm doing with my life, or who I'm dating, or who I'm not dating, or, you know, me, I don't know, different things that people have, family have shit to say about, you can, I think, feel more empowered to question them or, you know, push back on them, because they can't go anywhere. Like, they're, and so, yeah, I think, you know, as someone that definitely comes from a, or I would say definitely has a mother that feels like that is important, you know, like, you know, keeping close relationships with extended family, I have always kind of looked at it as, like, you know, not why, but yeah, like, why, you know, why, if this person is not making me, if this person is not contributing positively to my life, why? And yeah, and I think that that is something that I would practice too, and eventually when I have kids, passed down too, because I think that, I mean, you only get one life, right? So you shouldn't force to spend your time around people unhappy. Like, no, that, I feel like that's ridiculous. So yeah, those toxic relationships, cut them off, because for what?
And, you know, just wanted to make a point that outgrowing people is natural and normal. Yeah. And even outgrowing, or, you know, getting rid of or transitioning through toxic relationships, like, that is natural and that is normal. And I think, like, our families might, or our communities might make us feel like it's not. Yeah. Like, it's us, like, turning our backs on them because I don't want to be around that aunt who only talks shit, or about that cousin who only, you know, makes me feel bad. And so, you know, if you are one of those people who have a relationship, whether it be a friendship, a significant other, or a family member, and you feel like you're outgrowing them, that doesn't make you, like, a snobby, a bougie, like, a whatever person. It just means that, you know, everyone goes through these things. And I think sometimes it's like, not okay to voice that, especially when it comes to family, like Ebony was saying. But I think that, you know, you really do have to think, is this person being positive or negative? And, you know, you can't cut out your mom. There are ways to cut people out. You know, you can, the harshest way, I guess, would be to be blunt and, like, to end the friendship, to break up with them, to tell them you don't want to see them anymore, to tell them not to call you. But there are other ways you can cut people out, which includes, like, being more unavailable. So if they want to go out to lunch, just be busy, you know, just, you know, say, like, oh, I'd love to, but, well, or just say, like, you know, oh, I can't this week, you know, or you, if you're in town, don't tell them. Follow them on social media, yeah. Like, privacy settings. Don't let them know where you are. Don't let them know when you have parties. And this may seem, like, super passive aggressive, but I think that there are times where it's not, like, if it's your mom, if it's your sister, if it's a really close relative, like, sometimes I think, you know, you don't always have to just be like, sorry, mom, I don't want you in my life anymore. I don't want to have lunch with you every day. I think it can be okay to find strategies to just be in their presence a little less.
Yeah.
And so, you know, for me, it's ways that I've kind of handled it when, like, you know, I love my mom a lot and our relationship has really gotten a lot better. But there used to be a time where it just felt like you know, our relationship was more negative, and it's because our conversations always tended to be, you know, her being critical about everything I was doing and me responding with just resentment about that. Mm-hmm. And so I, like, shared less, and then there was less criticism. We got to a point where we rebuilt our relationship, and then I started sharing more. And so, like, your friendship, your relationship with families can transition in and out themselves. So maybe you'll be less involved with them, less sharing, see them less, but, you know, as you become a better person, as you have these skills, maybe you're going to therapy, maybe you're, you know, you spend some time apart, and that helps you, like, miss each other, but y'all can transition back into, like, having, you know, a close relationship too. And so I think that's something I've seen with my mom, where there are definitely times in my life where my relationship wasn't good with them, and then it became great. I don't know. I think, like, as I was, you know, reading and thinking about this topic, I really wanted to talk about it because, and one of the things I wanted to emphasize is, like, it's not a chronological thing. It's not just like, first we're friends, then we're not, or first, yeah, you know, family, I have a great relationship with all my family, I have a bad relationship with everyone, or I have a really good relationship with my mom, or I have a really bad relationship with my mom. It's like, I've had ups and downs with practically every relationship in my life. Yeah. That's partly me, like, me, you know, dealing with my own shit, but that's also partly, like, just growing up. Yeah, and so life. I think that healthy relationships grow too. So I think, you know, just because your relationship changes, like, I'm not saying that just because your relationship changes, that means you have to end or transition it. And I don't mean that a transition has to be bad. Like, a transition can be good. I've had, you know, being in grad school, I have friends who I, you know, would go to class with for my master's. We'd be together almost every day. They move away for the PhD program. I rarely talk to them, but when we talk, it's like we have 3-hour Skype, you know, calls, and I tell them things that I don't tell, like, my mom, or I tell them, like, I get really deep with them. And so I think, like, just one of the things I wanted to kind of emphasize is, you know, in thinking about transitioning relationships or ending them, it's not like clear cut, like, oh, I don't talk to them anymore every day, I don't text them every day, and I need to cut them out of my life. Mm-hmm. It's more like, what do they bring to your life? And do you feel good when you talk to them? Are they helpful? And I think it's okay to have different types of relationships and different levels. And then the final thing I wanted to kind of bring up is, like, I think with social media, we are made to believe that we need to have, like, 200 friends. Yeah. And I know that sometimes people feel bad when they're like, I only have, like, 5 friends, like, 5 real friends that I talk to, 5 real friends that really, like, a call and talk to, like, 3 times a week. And when I hear people say that, it's like they're kind of ashamed that they only have, like, 5 to 6 friends, because we were brought up to believe we need, like, 1,000. And so, you know, if you're thinking and you're like, oh shit, like, I don't have that many relationships to begin with, like, that's not a bad thing either. And it's also not bad if you have a lot of them. It's just, like, people are different and you have different relationships, and they change as you change.
Yeah, I feel like 5 solid friends sounds like a win to me.
I know, I was thinking that too. I was like, I actually think that that's all.
Yeah, like, I feel like you have too many friends, you end up having too many bridesmaids. Like, you can't, because then you can't have, I mean, it's like, it sucks because it's like, dang, I can't have all the people that I care about as bridesmaids, and so what do I do? Yeah, what I was going to say is, like, you know, I think that another thing that social media does is, like, it makes you feel like, you know, you have to, I think that social media and all the memes and everything and everybody sharing their life constantly and then you seeing other people's lives makes you feel like everything has to be on the up and up all the time. And I think, you know, like what you were saying earlier, like sometimes you may go through a rough patch with a friendship. That does not mean that it has to end. You know, that it has to, you know, that you have to cut that person off or whatever. Like, there can be periods of time where, you know, maybe y'all aren't talking as much, or maybe, you know, you're having some kind of disagreement or whatever, or like you were saying, Zama, like that person moved or you moved, and maybe y'all don't have the same closeness that you used to have. That does not mean friendship has to end. Like they can, you know, like they ebb and flow, and you never know where you might end up years from now. Because if we're, I mean, I don't know what demographic is for our listeners, but you know, Zama and I are in our 20s. And so it's like a lot of life ahead of us. You know, who knows where we'll be in our late 30s, our 40s. You could potentially reconnect with somebody that you used to be friends with when you were teenagers because, oh, now you guys live in the same city again, or now y'all both moved and happen to be in the same city. So you don't want to just, you know, cut that person off because like, oh, we don't talk as much as we used to. Like, you never know where life will take you. And, you know, everybody goes through different, like, shifts and changes, things like that. I think that the most important thing is to just be open and communicate effectively about whatever you're experiencing. Or if you're the source of whatever issues are in your relationship, communicate whatever you're going through. And if you feel like somebody else is causing some tension in the relationship, then communicate that too. I think that, you know, as long as everybody's on the same page about things, they can work out.
Yeah, and I think just the last thing I wanted to just bring up is in thinking about outgrowing, like outgrowing relationships can be painful, but they can also be a relief. So it can be painful because it's like, you know, you miss. I mean, I miss. I remember growing up thinking, like, I'm going to